Around 11 a.m. on December 8th, Donna Johnson stopped by to say hello to Debbie. The two had been close in high school before Donna moved to Shawnee, an hour away. She was in town for the day to see her parents and catch up with some friends. As she bounced up the narrow outdoor staircase to Debbie's garage apartment, she slowed when she realized she was stepping on broken glass. The small window in the door was broken. For some reason, her first thought was that Debbie had locked her keys inside and been forced to break a window to get in. Donna knocked on the door. There was no answer. Then she heard music from a radio inside. When she turned the knob, she realized the door was not locked. One step inside, and she knew something was wrong. The small den was a wreck. Sofa cushions thrown on the floor. Clothing scattered about. Across the wall to the right, someone had scrawled, with some type of reddish liquid, the words, "Jim Smith next will die." Donna yelled Debbie's name. No response. She had been in the apartment once before, so she moved quickly to the bedroom, still calling for her friend. The bed had been moved, yanked out of place, all the covers pulled off. She saw a foot. Then on the floor, on the other side of the bed, she saw Debbie, face down, nude, bloody, with something written on her back. Donna froze in horror, unable to step forward, instead staring at her friend and waiting for her to breathe. Maybe it was just a dream, she thought. She backed away and stepped into the kitchen, where, on a small white table, she saw more words scribbled and left behind by the killer. He could still be there, she suddenly thought, then ran from the apartment to her car. She sped down the street to a convenience store where she found a phone and called Debbie's mother. Peggy Stillwell heard the words, but could not believe them. Her daughter was lying on the floor, nude, bloodied, not moving. She made Donna repeat what she had said, then ran to her car. The battery was dead. Numb with fear, she ran back inside and called Charlie Carter, Debbie's father, and her ex-husband. The divorce a few years earlier had not been amicable, and the two rarely spoke. No one answered at Charlie Carter's. A friend named Carol Edwards lived across the street from Debbie. Peggy called her, told her something was terribly wrong, and asked her to run and check on her daughter. Then Peggy waited and waited. Finally, she called Charlie again, and he answered the phone. Carol Edwards ran down the street to the apartment, noticed the same broken glass and the open front door. She stepped inside and saw the body. Charlie Carter was a thick-chested brick mason who occasionally worked as a bouncer at the coach light. He jumped in his pickup and raced toward his daughter's apartment, along the way thinking every horrible thought a father could have. The scene was worse than anything he could have imagined. When he saw her body, he called her name twice. He knelt beside her, gently lifted her shoulder so he could see her face. A bloody washcloth was stuck in her mouth. He was certain his daughter was dead, but he waited anyway, hoping for some sign of life. When there was none, he stood slowly and looked around. The bed had been moved, shoved away from the wall. The covers were missing. The room was in disarray. Obviously, there had been a struggle. He walked to the den and saw the words on the wall. Then he went to the kitchen and looked around. It was a crime scene now. Charlie stuffed his hands in his pockets and left. Donna Johnson and Carol Edwards were on the landing outside the front door, crying and waiting. They heard Charlie say goodbye to his daughter and tell her how sorry he was for what had happened to her. When he stumbled outside, he was crying too. "Should I call an ambulance?" Donna asked. "No," he said. "Ambulance won't do no good. Call the police."